Welcome to another edition of the Team Turnbuckle Podcast on the IB Sports Podcast Network. This week, the guys are going to discuss the Ultimate Warrior documentary, the Smart Mark overreaction of the week, where the hell Keith Lee is, a John Cena sighting, and then do an in-depth preview of AEW Double or Nothing. But before we officially start that, just want to remind everyone that the IB Sports podcast feed is available on iTunes, Spotify, and Anchor. We would greatly appreciate it if you would rate, review, and share that podcast. And if you do, rate and review 5 stars only, please. And with that, I am Chief Keith Fleming, the head of this table. Joining me, as always, the ravishing one, Ronel, I've got so many belts, I don't know what to do, Tinsley, and Sam, the shooter, Howe. What's going on, guys?
Just another Monday, getting through it. Glad to be doing this, to not have to be dealing with fucking insurance companies anymore.
We'll see. We've got some topics to talk about today.
Oh, so I'm surly. This should be good.
Ronel?
Oh, man, I'm doing well, man. I'm just glad to be back at it. Had a hellish weekend at work. So, honestly, this is a much-needed reprieve.
Yeah, it just, as I shared the meme, both in the Facebook group and Twitter, though, just stay away from Twitter pretty much altogether. Because, I mean, seriously, somebody shared it. I think y'all had probably seen the Simba one where it was about Raw, which was really funny. As you know, you see light as far as I can see, and it's SmackDown, it's NXT, it's AEW, and then he's like, well, what's over in the dark? He's like, that's Raw, you should never go over there. There's a new one that is just, that's wrestling as far as I can see, and the same thing is, oh, that's wrestling Twitter, stay the hell away from it. Some days it's hard, and we're gonna get into some stuff that made it even harder, but let's get right off the top. Again, there's gonna be no superlatives this week. We'll get back into that next week. We do want to preview the AEW podcast, that's why. But off the top, I want to start with the Ultimate Warrior documentary on A&E. We talked a little bit about the Shawn Michaels one last week. I kind of wish we would have talked about all of these. We may even do a separate podcast, who knows, discussing them, because they've been really good, definitely from a certain perspective. That was another funny tweet I saw this week, is we're going to have bookend Ultimate Warrior documentaries this morning with Dark Side of the Ring and the AE biography, and somebody mentioned, I think these are going to have two different slants. What do you think? So we got the lighter version of the Warrior this week. I had three big takeaways, and I'll let you guys take it in whatever direction you want to. It was kind of hard not to feel some sympathy for the Warrior watching this. He, in many ways, like, remained the scared little 11-year-old boy that was left by his father. I'm not making this an excuse for him, but I mean, there is. I mean, one of the people on there was a psychologist, and he's talking about that so much of his behavior. I mean, you just look at it. He went into bodybuilding, for God's sakes. Like, he was searching for masculinity, for so much of his earlier life. So it does, it just makes you feel a little sympathy, because you don't ever know what someone has, you know, been through or whatever. But then in the same boat, you can't deny some of the extremely terrible behaviors, extremely racist things that he said along the way. And I do want to point out that's good on both his wife and his daughters, who made the point. And I know they didn't go too much into it, but that's not this kind of documentary. But they both went out of their way to say that you can't, you know, talk about him now without mentioning the good and the bad just because he's gone, which I think people forget about, that, you know, just when somebody dies, it doesn't mean that you can't tell the whole story. We saw a lot of that with Kobe Bryant. And I mean, I understand giving maybe a few days for family and close friends, but in reality, you should be able to talk about the whole picture of somebody, give somebody the entire 360 angle. And then finally, and probably my biggest takeaway, Vince McMahon is the hater of the millennium. For those that did not watch, Warrior had to he basically went off on a fan in the airport, a kid too, I should make that very clear, who wanted basically, I think, just to interact with him. I don't even know if he said he wanted an autograph or a picture, but Warrior went nuts on him. So Vince made him do basically a promo for the kid.
Oh, you didn't catch that was somebody who was connected to the WWE?
Yeah, I did.
Okay,
yeah,
okay. I did.
And that was as a punishment. So much so, or excuse me, the letter then Vince wrote Warrior after SummerSlam, which for all intent and purposes, Warrior was holding WWE hostage. So much so that Hogan, Sheik, and Slaughter were talking about breaking his leg during the match. But Vince shut that down with always Vince being the good guy. I don't want a lawsuit, guys. Not that it's the wrong thing to do. He doesn't want a lawsuit on top of everything else. I want to read to you the letter he wrote back to Warrior. And I mean, this is just, again, this guy, it sounded like he looked at Vince as a father figure. It would make sense with his dad leaving him. And they said, you know, his wife, other people said it looked like he was kind of constantly looking for family, for father figures. Frankly, you have become impossible to work with and have completely forgotten your obligations to Titan and WWF fans, both ethically, professionally, and contractually. The letter reads in part, your principal complaint apparently is that you are not being compensated at the same rate as Hulk Hogan, although Hulk, in parentheses, is a living legend, is still better known to the public, has wrestled longer, is the WWE champion, is in much greater demand for personal appearances, is a bigger star and draw at WWF events, is more dependable, and is far more revered and respected by WWF fans and the public at large. There's some more to that, but you get the gist. I mean, Vince is somebody you do not want to mess with, right? Like, where are the bodies?
Well, there's the one of fucking
Snuka's wife, girlfriend. Yeah, our girlfriend.
Like, the amount of people who died because Vince didn't want to give guaranteed contracts. Like, the people who've died because they don't have fucking health insurance. The fact that there's no pension plan. Like, there's a lot of bodies in Vincent Mann's closet. Like, and you could be like, well, you know, the other promotions don't do it either, blah, 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 blah. Like, whatever the fuck you want to say. But, like, Vince is the only game in town.
Sorry. There's a reason, too, right, that he is the only game in town, right? Because he broke a rule that was kind of an unwritten rule, but, I mean, it was a rule that you don't, you know, poach other people's territories and
stars. Yeah, I was going to – Vince just did that. That was – that once cable TV came out, there was never going to be a point where once you couldn't – like, they talked about this in the Bruce Pritchard podcast, where the shows in, like, Memphis would be, like, you would do – Memphis, you would have a title change that would air on TV in Chattanooga on a Saturday, but it would air in Memphis on a Friday. And so, or whatever it was, like you would keep the title. Like the world was just was smaller at that point.
All right. So,
like,
so what about Warrior?
I'd honestly, it's surprising to me. I had like was in college and had a lot more free time on my hands, I think, than a lot of other people. So the Warrior's Machete, which was his blog, like, they actually kind of undersold how shitty he was. There were stories about him, like, there are blog posts where he, like, shit on Heath Ledger, because Heath Ledger did the Brokeback Mountains. Like, apparently being gay in a movie means you're gay in real life. And we all know how...
When you say shit on, you mean after he died, right?
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
And, like, also, like, ripped on Hulk Hogan. Like, it was really...
Well, he's ahead of his time on that, if we're being honest.
Oh, yeah. I mean, fair enough. I thought that, Rana, what were your thoughts on it?
Oh man, I had the roller coaster of emotions. I, you know, shared in the thread. I literally was, the credits hadn't even finished rolling when I had sent you guys that message. To me, it was up and down. Number one, I still get the freaking tinglies watching that WrestleMania 6 match. It still happened just as if I was watching back then. Hairs on the back of my neck.
Not to interrupt you, I also want to say, and it has been lost, also the Honky Tonk Man moment, which is kind of forgotten about until you see it again. And immediately I was just like, man, that was such a moment. He was champ for over a year, and the place just came unglued. He runs down, and it's over. I mean, it was really impressive.
I mean, we have to take into account that the Honky Tonk Man was the man who had unseated Ricky Steamboat, who, of course, the WrestleMania 3. And so it was like Jimmy Hart had said, God, June, I want to say, if I remember correctly, it was like June 2nd or July 2nd of that year of 87. And then it was SummerSlam that late August of 88 that Honky had been holding the title. And Honky Tonk Man was an amazing Intercontinental Champion with how he held it, and just revisiting that moment, like watching this on the show was longer than the actual match, but just seeing the crowd and his arrival and now knowing all that backstory stuff about him just really propped up that moment.
Well, in kayfabe also,
why did they not though bring up the WCW?
Well, hold on. The kayfabe like thing with Warrior and Honky Tonk Man was that Honky had always like gotten countout wins. Like, he didn't win cleanly, he would get countout wins. And so Warrior, like in kayfabe, was really smart and came down, and before Honky could get out of the ring, he beat him.
Right.
Why didn't they mention WCW? Because I think that it was all superfluous. I mean, what the part of the story, I mean, he comes back for a cup of coffee so that Hogan can get his win back, or whatever justification you want to have. This WCW could pop a rating. But
it was just weird that they mentioned to me the WrestleMania 12 and not the, you know, the WCW. Because to me, the WCW was, I know the WrestleMania 12 was technically the last time he was signed for WWF before, you know, he came back for his retirement deal. But I just, to me, the WCW deal, it did seem big, if you remember, at first. And then it was same old, and then obviously he got beaten, a really poorly booked match, but and terribly put together match. But I was just interested they didn't bring that up at all.
Well, they also didn't mention, you know, that gym where he met his wife. He just like randomly closed that down one day. Like, I've heard different people in the WWF talk about it, where it was this like beautiful facility, and there had been all this push behind it, and then Warrior just one day closed it.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, it's, I think that he, and the WCW thing, I just think was, you know, they had 2 hours or, you know, really an hour and a half of commercials. There's only so much that you can cover.
You know, my biggest takeaway from this entire thing, like, I'm watching, like I was talking about the WrestleMania 6 moment, you know, there was a couple of those moments during watching this where, you know, I get that same energy that I used to have. And in one hand, I'm just like, and especially looking at Hogan and Warrior, I'm like, you mother, like, you, as much as like I detest the things and the actions that you've done, you guys still just kind of have that place. And it just shows to me that, you know,
all nostalgia. You know,
yeah. Well, and on top of that, like, it just shows that our ability to love people, even when they've wronged you, or, you know, they've done really, really awful things. It was a great bio. I can't wait to see the flip side of it.
Yeah, the dark side of the ring should be,
it's gonna be wild.
The one thing that I was like a little bit, I guess, is like Dana Warrior, it's sort of talking about, like, I felt like there was a little bit I didn't know if it, and I want to thread how I say this, but like, if there was a little bit of like, well, I wasn't part of that, you know, I didn't agree with that. And I was like, you know, I've never heard her talk about it, truthfully. And it's just really like, I remember when it was happening.
She wasn't really like, ever though in the spotlight until the, in fairness, I mean, like, I didn't know anything about her until he got inducted in the Hall of Fame. So I don't know if she's been asked about it before. From what I've read, she is apparently a genuinely, you know, good person. I think, I just think she and her daughters deserve a lot of credit. You don't hear too many, especially family members, in a documentary being like, you can't just ignore, you know, the bad things that they did. And again, they're not going to go in big time depth in that. I don't know if they're going to be involved in the dark side of the ring. Who knows?
So Dana Warrior is. I just want to get to two last points on this. The first one is that I thought it was a little like, did you see the thing about like Christmas where like he would write like things that they needed on over the next year? But I also, you know, obviously they grew up. I thought that
it's airing of grievances.
Yeah. Well, I thought it was really interesting where he talked about his feelings being hurt, which like, I don't want to like, you know, excuse him or anything, but I think you also have to allow people to grow. And I don't know, like, that's a kind of vulnerability that I don't think you would have seen from somebody, you know. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe he could absolutely say that when he was like, you know, like, I, you know, that whole like conservative worldview of like, I get mine and fuck everyone else. which is what he seemed to like.
You heard what he was saying before going into the room. Again, it's about masculinity. You know, he said, I gotta amp myself up. It's a battle. It's, you know, it's all this. And I mean, that was what Dana said at the end. And I thought was one of the most poetic things was, this is a man that didn't understand masculinity. And, you know, he was searching for that because of his father leaving. And it wasn't until late in his life meeting people that were men, but, you know, were not necessarily what you would think of as the traditional scent masculinity, that kind of got him to open up and understand that, you know, there's a million different ways to be a man. There's a million different ways to have relationships with people, et cetera, et cetera. Okay. Smart Mark overreaction of the week. I'm going to start doing this every week because, I mean, the internet's out of control. Much to do and not about nothing is what I'm going to call this. Jim Ross called Randy Orton the best wrestler on the planet. He said, I don't think anybody is any better than Randy Orton in the wrestling business. Of course, that's so subjective. I love Randy's work, although I don't watch it regularly enough to make a great evaluation. Nice save, JR. Not watching WWE. I get paid by AEW, don't forget. In the last several months that I've tuned in to watch some of Randy's segments, he doesn't disappoint. No matter how the creative is packaged to him, he doesn't disappoint. And finished with saying he wouldn't argue if others said Omega is the best. Again, way to cover yourself there, JR. Then Chris Jericho, who just likes to stick his nose in everything these days, says, in my opinion, Kenny Omega is the best wrestler in the world today. Others may feel differently, but I've been in the ring with everybody currently working on top, and there's nobody close. That's why Kenny is AEW champ, dash the most protected title in the biz. It's impossible to argue, which then Omega responded, which was pretty funny. Meh, I'd rather believe the bigot cuck, dimwit e-drones, and the guy that thinks I'm the WWE champion. other than just probably making Sam do a giant eye roll reading that JR thinks Randy Orton is the best wrestler in the business, which, let me tell JR, Kenny Omega, and Chris Jericho, they're all fucking wrong. It's Roman Reigns by a freaking mile right now.
It's Kazuchika. I mean, it depends on what you want to say.
I don't care what you want to say. It's Roman Reigns by a mile. A mile.
A country
Omega
mile.
Does not fucking interest me. And, like, yes, he can wrestle in the ring. He's not a character. He's not fucking Roman Reigns.
I'm not hanging on to every word he says.
Yeah. Like, I'm sorry. It's not close. It's not. And, like, Jericho knows that. He knows that. There's one guy that could fill up a 90,000-seat arena right now. It's Roman Reigns.
I mean, I'm going to have to check what the Tokyo Dome holds.
Yeah, you check what the Tokyo Dome holds.
Yeah, the whole thing, I mean, it's an excuse for people who like AEW more or like WWE more. I thought that... I mean, I'm assuming Kenny's stuff was mostly in character.
Yeah, Jericho, I believe, is also kind of in character. I really do. I think at this point, Jericho's almost like a troll.
Well, I mean, I think that, somewhat. I think that he was, you know, Jericho's always really good about promoting the brand that he's with, yada, yada, yada. I think that the best wrestler in the world, whatever, if you want to go by in-ring, if you want to go by whatever, it's some comp, it's you know, AJ Styles, Daniel Bryan, Kazuchika Okada, or Kenny Omega. Really, once you get up to that level, like, who gives a shit? Like, you're all at that level. Like, and it was just like watching people just overreact, man. It's just like,
yeah, I just proved it with my Roman Reigns
and the whole thing with like the whole fucking like most protected title in the business. It's like Kenny Omega can't beat the guy that he beat clean for the title, and I think that the worst part of Kenny Omega is the booking. Like, he's done no favors by the booking that shows that he's not as good as the WWE guy.
He means most protected title because that's the title he actually wears and doesn't have some crony carrying around. Even a smile, Sam. Well, screw you. Go ahead, Ron.
Well, you know, like you said, and your meme is so appropriate to this. This is just something to get us talking again. And maybe it's one of the reasons that I do stay away from Twitter, just because I understand, like, to me, I look at Twitter as Reddit or 4chan light. So it's
closer to 4chan than Reddit.
4chan are very different places.
Yeah. Like.
No, I know, but it's like those are seedy places that I just, you know, if I'm going to go, It's for a brief. I grab my visitor's pass, walk in the door, see what I wanted to see, drop my visitor's pass, and walk away.
I got to introduce you to Reddit wrestling. It's pretty interesting, actually. But anyway,
it's crazy. But one thing I want to touch, because right before we went on the air, you know, I understand that the wrestling community as a whole on the internet is just, it's one of the worst places in the world. And I actually went to the comment section on a post about Tony Khan donating $10,000 to Cesar Bononi's wife in her battle for leukemia. And I actually saw two dudes going at it who were just like, you know what? We actually didn't have to have this exchange. I'm sorry, dude. And I'm like, it warmed my freaking heart that I found one corner of the internet wrestling community where two dudes actually just, and they did that thing where, you know, kids start walking around in a fight, you know, doing the fight thing. They've got the fists up. And they basically just do the dance, shake hands, and walk away.
Yeah, it's pretty rare.
Very.
Moving on to some news I'm excited about. The man, Mr. You Can't See Me himself, John Cena, is getting close for a WWE return. Two parts I want to ask you guys here. A, how excited are you that he's returning? And B, more importantly, how good is going to be Reigns versus Cena? Because we're going to get heel Reigns versus face Cena and a returning Cena. Maybe your SummerSlam match. Maybe I was wrong about Rollins.
I am fine with this. I'm going to be the guy, the wet blanket who ruins everything. As long as we don't get Cena Nexus or Cena, those aren't your real cars, like he did to Alberto Del Rio. I think that as long as he comes in and is as giving as he has been in the last few years, it should be pretty fucking dope.
Oh, it's going to be amazing. I mean, Cena has always been pretty top notch on the mic, you know, for quite some time. So with the way that we've always been talking about recently about how hot on the mic Roman has been, just those two working together verbally will definitely get us all worked up for whatever it is they're going to present to us in ring.
I'm excited about the match.
Totally. I'm wondering, I mean, if we're having a Cena return, do we know for how long?
I would assume this is, I mean, he's supposed to come back in the first, the rumor is per Dave Meltzer, July 16th would be the first SmackDown that he's back. I would assume he'd be back through SummerSlam to promote Suicide Squad. The one thing that I wonder about with this, the one thing that I have questioned about is ring rust. I mean, he wrestled in 2.5 years.
I don't think Firefly, it matters.
No, it doesn't. And I was going to say the Firefly Fun, but the Firefly Funhouse match wasn't a match.
Oh, yeah.
So they didn't really rest. I mean, they did a few spots.
Cena Reigns match is going to be about storytelling anyway, which both those guys can do. I'm not worried about it at all. I understand what you're saying, but I also believe with, you know, Florida and I mean, everything. He's gonna be ready. Like, Cena will be ready. I don't see Cena if he's gonna have a marquee match against Reigns going in there and not being ring ready.
Here's an interesting question I just want to ask. When do you think? I mean, my expectation is that Cena will get a pure face reaction. No one is going to boo him over Roman Reigns. You know, no one's going to cheer Roman over Cena. It's not going to be that split reaction. When was the last time Cena got just like purely cheered like that?
He has one thing I've always been the reason I think Cena is one of the best on the mic ever. If you listen to a ton of Cena promos, even during like his most booed times, like early 2010s, maybe mid 2010s, he could turn a crowd around with a promo. He's that good on the mic. I mean, if you're talking about just a pure straight up face reaction, I mean, hell, you're probably going all the way back to like 2009.
I would go back even further than that. I was going to say like 05. I think that he has always gotten those let's go Cena sucks since like 05 when it became very clear that he was the guy and they put him over like Angle and Jericho and all these other people. And it might be 15 or 16 years since Cena's gone out and not heard let's go Cena sucks.
I'm sure there'll be some Cena sucks. I mean, there'll be at least 10 smart fans in the crowd. My man Keith Lee was not released. I just want to point that out. That is something we're going to touch on off the top because we still don't know where Keith Lee is. We still don't know what's going on. There's all kinds of different reports. He responded to a fan on Twitter who asked, will he wrestle in WWE again? Only time will tell. I got to say, A, full discretion. I try to do this on all the podcasts I'm on. I'll tell you when I'm right. I'm telling you when I'm wrong. I was 100% confident that even WWE can't screw up Keith Lee. Yep, good call, Keith.
Sweet summer child.
Good call, Keith. What are they doing with him?
Like, I wish I had a clue. Like, I know we, a few weeks ago, were talking about the injury, the possible injury, and, you know, getting himself cleared and being able to get back in the ring. If that's no longer the case and they're just waiting, I have no idea what it is they're waiting for. I mean, he was as hot as you needed him to be. You were ready to put a mid-card title on him. Why has the plans altered unless what's keeping him out could pose serious issues to him being there long-term?
I'm of the mind that it's something personal that we don't know about. I don't know if I just don't know. I am skeptical that they, you know, they obviously could just release him. I don't think that they want to. I think they see something in him. I'm skeptical that they could go from.
He would be a huge gift for AEW.
Oh yeah.
Where does he fit in? I mean, that's the.
What do you mean, where does he fit in? He would be a monster in AEW. I mean, he would make like Jack Hager and those guys that look like monsters look like little boys. I mean, he can talk. I don't want to make the Keith Lee case again, but I mean, what do you mean, where would he fit in? You make him fit in. I mean, that there's your star.
I thought Kenny Omega was going to be the star.
Kenny Omega does not have the personality or. Like, yes, in the ring, Kenny Omega is amazing. Kenny Omega is not a personality. Keith Lee is.
I agree with you.
I'm not going to shit on Kenny Omega. I just think
I'm not shitting on him. It's a fact. Like, he's not a person. It's not a knock on him. He's not that interesting. In the ring, he's amazing. But like his character, like I don't even really know what his character is.
I'm skeptical that they will let Keith Lee go. I don't know what the issue is. I don't want to speculate on it. I don't think it's, I assume that it is something personal. You know, his response is none of your business to somebody. I mean, it's none of one's business. I would like him to come back because I'm a fan of his.
Supposedly Yim's coming to SmackDown too, right? I read a report that she was supposed to be 2 weeks ago on SmackDown. Ask herself, and then I don't know if it got pushed because it was the final before the pay-per-view or what was going on. Oh, no, they ran out of time, and then the last episode before was right for pay-per-view. So, I mean, I don't know what's going on. They didn't show up again this Friday, though.
I'd be down to see that. You know, get her away from this whole the reckoning thing. Let the girl go. She's got talent.
Well, if Keith Lee is okay, bring him back, for God's sakes.
Please.
Two more things are off the top, then we'll get into AEW. Money in the Bank has been moved to July. For those that did not know, Hell in a Cell is next up in the spot that has recently been for Money in the Bank, right? I guess traditionally Money in the Bank used to be in July, didn't it, though?
Thought so, because I was pretty sure that last year's Hell in a Cell was that not September, October?
Right.
They initially it was scheduled. Money in the Bank was going to be June, but I think they realized like we can have fans.
And well, that's the deal, and that's what I was going to say. Is that the right first non-Mania pay-per-view to have fans? It seems like it, right?
Yes.
You get the biggest pops, absolutely.
I think that having a yearly Hell in a Cell pay-per-view is stupid.
Mm-hmm.
I think that it's fucking stupid to me.
It devalues the match.
Yes. The whole point of Hell in a Cell, the reason why it was fucking invented, this is one of my big fucking things with the WWE, is that Vince is so senile that he does stuff and he forgets why stuff was impactful in the first place. So the whole reason why you invented Hell in a Cell was because the Shawn Michaels Undertaker feud couldn't be contained. They kept having these matches that spilled out and that didn't finish. So you put them in a fucking cell instead of the solid steel cage. The whole thing with the Austin feud, like, you didn't fire Austin because he was such a big money draw, and it eventually ramped up to the point where Austin was like dumping concrete in Vince's car. It didn't start out there. It started out with Austin coming out in a suit and Vince being like, well, you're wearing combat boots, and Austin being like, you couldn't just let it go.
He punched him in the balls too, which was great.
Exactly.
Finally, for off the top, and I mean this in the most respectful way ever, but Aleister Black made his return on SmackDown. And again, I hate to put it this way, but should anybody care?
Sure. Honestly, I want to, but he's been more entertaining reading from a book. So they better be lightning quick with giving this character some direction as to at least what he's doing, some motivation.
I'm one of those people who has been talking about, complaining about...
Same thing for you.
Yeah, I know. I'm usually so sunny and bright. One of my big complaint for AEW and WWE is that they don't have tiers. Is that you don't have, like, other than Roman, everyone, and honestly, Drew and Lashley, everyone sort of cycles through. Rollins, for example, was a mid-carder, now he's going to be main eventer. I really don't have a problem. Like, some guys just aren't meant to win the world title. It's not the end of the world. And having Aleister Black as like a solid mid-card and building up a very solid mid-card division with guys, you know, Apollo, I think, is a future world champion. But fuck it. Yeah, let Aleister Black come in. Let him be a solid U.S. IC champion. Like, I think it's great. And I think that the more you flesh that out and sort of eventually have a fleshed out main event scene, you can have a more successful company.
No, I mean, you're very much right, Sam. I'm just saying that with all the time they've wasted on Aleister Black through these last 2 years, I'm sorry if this is one of those instances. I just feel that they better get to what he wants, what's his motivation, what's he going to be striving towards, and they better do that fast.
For this episode segment of Not That I'm Trying to Book, But I'm Going to Book It Anyway, I don't know why they ever let Selena go. They're a real-life couple. Just put them together. I think that would have been more interesting and entertaining than anything.
I never shared that word on the street. Is that Zelina has been seen at the PC?
Well, maybe they're bringing her back. She was great. It would make a lot of sense.
And I'd love her back in the ring.
Absolutely. So AEW has a pay-per-view, a real pay-per-view. You actually got to pay for it, which kind of sucks, but...
What have we become?
I know. But, I mean, they spoiled me. I mean, to be honest, it's their fault for putting on, you know, these two-hour shows basically at least once a month. It's like a mini pay-per-view. And it's like, wait a minute, I got to pay $70 for this?
Oh, no, I meant that, like, we can, like, WWE pay-per-views.
I know. Yeah. No, that's fair, too. I didn't even think about that. The Casino Battle Royal is May 30th. If you remember, this was really the beginning of COVID last year, right? This was the first one they had without fans, I believe.
Pretty sure I think you're right.
First show of pay-per-view.
First pay-per-view.
Yeah, yeah.
So let's start with the Casino Battle Royal. Since, you know, they had the Double or Nothing, this is kind of the marquee match. They had it last year. This was Brian Cage's big moment, right?
Yes.
Yeah, that's kind
that
of,
was his debut.
Make
yeah.
It
yeah.
Memorable, though, if you can't remember that. Some of the people that are already in this match: Griff Garrison, Brian Pillman Jr., Preston Vance, Stu Grayson, Nick Camaroto, QT Marshall, Lee Johnson, Dustin Jones, Anthony Bowens, Max Caster, Pentel Zero, Isaiah Cassidy, Matt Sydal, Christian Cage, Matt Hardy. The powerhouse Hobbs is getting me. Just call him freaking Hobbs. I don't understand why they have to have powerhouse everywhere.
So that they don't get sued by Universal for using the name
Hobbs and Shaw.
The Furious movie.
Evil Uno, Colt Cabana, Jungle Boy, and a mystery entrant. So, first, who's the mystery entrant?
Daniel Bryan. No, I'm kidding.
Oh, come on.
I'm sorry. No, I honestly don't have a clue.
It's not the Big Show?
I wouldn't be that much of a
Mark Henry. I don't know who's an old WWE guy.
All right, so we're not really interested in the entrance. The only reason I say that is because remember last year the mystery entrant in the ladder match went on to win it. So it could be a deal where the mystery entrant ends up winning. That's why it's just interesting to me. Who do you got winning this? I'm going to go with Christian Cage. The minute I saw Christian was in this match, I totally see this coming down to him and Hobbs and Christian getting the win. You kind of close that storyline loophole, and, I mean, they had to bring him in for an eventual title match.
I'm wondering, especially after the whole he's getting a lot of eyes on him thanks to that dark side. I'm wondering if we get a Brian Pillman Jr. win.
I wondered if there's either a New Japan or a because the if there's either a New Japan or there is a Impact wrestler who comes in as the mystery entrant. The what's his name broke his Will Ospreay and a little bit of karma almost a year after speaking out hurt his neck and lost.
This is the biggest smile Sam's had the entire.
I'm not listen. I am not happy he's injured. I don't ever want somebody to be injured.
You're happy that karma's alive and well.
Here's I'm what happy goes that around. Karma. Here's what comes around. My assumption is that I actually would pick Cage to win it. I think that you need that would be maybe Lance Archer. I don't know.
No. Archer's later on. Archer's later in the match. Later on the card.
They both are later on the card.
Clearly, you can see how excited I am about that.
I apologize. I mean, I'm sorry. I love AEW. They've lost its shine. They've lost a little of its momentum.
Maybe it's Honky Tonk Man is the special entrant and winning since we just talked about him.
I will be honest with you. If it's Okada, I would lose my shit.
That would be cool. I don't think it's going to be, though. AEW, so far, when they build something up, they've not lived up to it. So I'm just glad that they're not saying it's going to be a groundbreaking or whatever they were saying for Christian, the seismic shift to the wrestling industry. Next match, I actually am really excited about this, and I have to give them credit for just this match in general. You're going to get Hangman Page going against Brian Cage. I was livid. I guess it was about a month ago when his undefeated streak was I guess he's not technically undefeated, but his streak of wins ended with Brian Cage. He came crashing down the rankings, which is another thing I, again, do not understand how the rankings were. So he lost for the first time in like 20 tries, and he fell like 5 or 6 spots. And I'm like, okay. But it looks like they were just building up to this. And I mean, this is going to be a big moment for him to get the win on the pay-per-view. And I think Hangman is a little bit of AEW, what WWE is doing with just about basically everything other than Roman, is they're just kind of holding everything in place until they get fans back. I feel like that's what they've been doing with Hangman, is they've just kind of put him to the side, almost a lot like what they did with Omega, you know, before his championship run, where they just kind of put him over here, do other stuff. We're not going to really put you in a spotlight. You're not going to have big singles moments. And then all of a sudden, you're going to be on like a buckshot. I think this is going to be Hangman's big win, and then you're going to see very quickly, and I mean very quickly, like maybe by all in, I always get it mixed up, him fighting Omega for the title. What do you guys think?
I think that's just about accurate. There's just really something special about Adam Page. I very much enjoy his character. And it's so strange, you know, when we compare this like to Kenny Omega, I was really excited when AEW was formed about, oh man, I finally get to see all about what this Kenny Omega is about and so on and so forth. And I hate to say this, but, you know, I've been highly disappointed. The upside to that is that with him being partnered with Hangman Page, we got to see definitely one of the biggest and brightest that they have going forward. So I can't wait to see number one, this match, because I think it's going to be fantastic. And I just can't wait to see what happens further with Hangman Page.
I'm also picking Hangman Page. I don't think he loses twice to Cage. I think that August is too soon to take the title off of Kenny Omega. And I don't think it means as much if all Kenny does is beat, because he's not losing the title. I mean, spoiler alert about later, but he's not losing the title. And I think a guy who fiddle farts around, can't beat Moxley clean. I have a feeling there's going to be some fuckery in the title match, which we'll get to more. Then what? So Paige beats some chump? No, I think Omega needs to build some momentum so that when Paige beats him, it means something.
They'll bring in a TN or a TNA guy.
He can beat Rich Swann clean. He needs fucking help to beat fucking Moxley.
All right. No, I think it's all fair there. Moving on to my least interesting match of the night, and I love Darby Allin. You know how much I talk about him, but Sting and Darby taking on Scorpio Sky and Ethan Page. I'm really conflicted about this match, at least for a prediction, or even how you book it, to be honest, because on the one hand, you have Sting, who, no offense, I don't think you brought him back to lose in tag team matches to, let's be honest, like middle card guys. Darby Allin, and I didn't know this. Did you guys know that he's actually, out of all the guys on AEW, proved to be the highest rated guy? When he's in the main event consistently, the main event gets the highest ratings.
Oh, it's amazing.
I can happens. Believe it.
Yeah, when you show somebody who's important and make them a big deal and have them main event frequently and win, people understand that that person is important. It's amazing. So,
I don't know if they're going to want Darby losing again, coming off of his, you know, title loss just recently to Miro. But at the same point, I was really excited when they turned Scorpio Sky heel. I like what him and Ethan Page are doing. And beating Sting and Darby Allin would be as big of a win as you could just about give two guys on AEW right now. So I am going to go out on a limb, and I'm going to say they're going to do the right thing and put Scorpio and Ethan over because they need it a lot more and will not be harmed as much by it going the other way.
I'd be inclined to agree with you there, especially with, like you said, with what they're doing with Scorpio and Ethan. I think it makes perfect sense for those two guys to go over somehow, find something shady to be able to take Sting out, because, you know, if we're being honest, Sting is the weaker link of the two between him and Darby. So I think it would make sense.
Sting's eating the pin. Sting, my guess is Scorpio Sky hits something on Sting. Darby comes in to break up the pin. Page stops him, and that gets us to a feud where Scorpio Sky wrestles Sting and Ethan Page wrestles Darby. That's my prediction.
Be down with both of those. So in Bizarro World, we have Mr. I Have Cured Racism, Cody Rhodes, versus Anthony Agogo. I really do hate the kid, but I just, there better be something up with this, because if not, it's the first time I can't really defend Cody if he's not working people here, because he's going to come down in red, white, and blue with he's always been the American Nightmare. Now he's going to be the American Dream, like his father, Dusty Rose. And he's going to, he cut a tone-deaf promo, American promo. I don't know if you saw Anthony's response on Twitter recently, but he's basically talking about red, white, and blue. Have you seen what you've done to my people? Which, again, it's hard to tell who's the face in the heel here. And I do, like, I am confident. I've seen a lot of people are not. Anthony's going over. I do not see Cody winning this match. And a lot of people are like, I see Cody winning. I don't. I would be shocked. Unless he turns flat-out heel and they try to do a double turn deal, which who knows, maybe they do. But I just, it would be crazy with everything that's going on in the last few weeks for Cody to win clean. I'm picking Anthony.
I mean, I'm seeing that if there's any chance for a double turn like that, that means that something would have to play out during that casino battle royale where he possibly costs QT Marshall the chance at the victory there. But no matter how they pull it off, I'm with you. Agogo's got to go over. I don't know. I very much enjoyed how he had made the one guy from the Nightmare Factory bleed from the mouth this past week. That was just...
His reaction was great, too, because at first he thought it was his blood. And he's like, oh, no, it's your blood.
No one makes me bleed my own blood.
That's right.
I'm... It's a toss-up to me. I think that there's a lot with Anthony Gogo. I think I mentioned this, is that I felt like that promo was too much Cody Runnels and not enough Cody. You know, I think that the emotion of it, I could see him really, you know, that's really what he feels like. But going out and being like, this is the greatest promo that was ever cut. Chill out there, Martin Luther King. Like,
well, I think it's a work. I'd be shocked.
Because Cody is a smart guy.
Yes,
I feel like he can afford a loss more than anything, and it would really push a Gogo over. But
and their whole faction for that to that end.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So next we have the TNT Championship match, Miro versus Lance Archer. I just want to say that I am, as a fan, sad that this is how Lance Archer has been used in AEW, as he was one of the few guys that actually watched some of his matches in New Japan for the 2 months that we lived with my parents when our house was being renovated. And I actually got whatever channel, I don't even know what channel it came on, like midnight. Oh, it was wonderful. He was just such a monster. And I get it. Like, he's not, like, he's kind of a fish out of water in AEW. I know Jake Snake's tried to do some stuff, but it's just kind of crazy that I believe it may have been this pay-per-view last year that Cody went over Lance Archer to win the TNT title. He basically does nothing for a year, and then here we are again for him to be beaten at this pay-per-view for the TNT title by Miro, which all that's correct. I don't want to come across that way. I really like Lance Archer, and I almost wonder if he would fit in better in WWE, believe it or not, than AEW. Who you guys got?
Miro.
I would love to see Lance Archer get it, but unfortunately now is just not the time. You got to let this Miro run right now. Play out.
AEW Women's Championship. Shida versus Britt Baker. Tell me why Britt Baker is winning the title and how.
I think she actually slaps on a second glove because she won't get the first one on. And she gets her finisher, but it's finally coronation time. Britt Baker, I am praying, Britt, just keep doing what you've been doing.
And watch and your nose.
And elevate this women's division. But I just absolutely love what she's doing. And let's get that woman that title.
Hopefully, even if she doesn't win the title, she fulfills her dream of getting 5 stars from Dave Meltzer.
Well, I'm serious. She needs to watch her nose, because last time she faced Shida, that was messed up. Her face was busted.
Busted up. Oh, yeah.
Up. But I really am happy for Britt Baker.
Yeah, in all seriousness, there's no way that Britt Baker's losing this match.
I think it's going to be a really good match, and I wouldn't be surprised again that if it gets a little extreme. I think that's kind of became her thing. Like, I think she knows she may have found a little bit of a niche there. It's the one thing, honestly, on a major scale – women have not done. Like, I mean, I know that Sasha and them have had Hell in Cell matches and stuff, but bleeding like a stuck pig, you know, apparently it's still cool even in 2021.
And, you know, it could just add another wrinkle. She's just been amazing. And, you know, Sheeta's had the longest title reign of all of the AEW women's championships. So they may touch on some extra brutality to make it count.
So, important, Sam.
It will. It's my defense of blood.
Oh, my God.
What's worse? Is it worse to have these people getting hit with weapons and shit and not bleed? Like, you need to have some consequences to this stuff, man.
Okay. I'm going to hit you with a chair when we get done with this podcast. In this week's Sam Might Lose His Mind segment, I believe John Moxley and Eddie Kingston are going to beat the Young Bucks to be tag champions, as Eddie Kingston is quickly taking out early in the match, and John Moxley beats the Young Bucks by himself easily to win the tag team title. Sound about right, Sam?
Sounds like what Tony Khan would book.
For those that don't know, Sam is very frustrated with how strong Moxley's been booked, especially when Omega is supposed to be kind of the star of the company and he didn't get a clean win over the guy that he won the belt from.
He doesn't even have to get a clean win. Just, can he not need, like, other people to help him? Like, first he needed Callus, then he needed the Good Brothers. Like, just hit him with a fucking chair.
I was going to say, yeah, give me the scepter.
But he's got a bleed.
Like, feel free to cheat. Just don't fucking have somebody else. Like, let me believe that this guy can do it himself.
So do you really think they're going to win the titles, though? All seriousness.
No, I don't. I think we need a more established tag team. I know that Moxley and Kingston have been, you know, buddies and, you know, hit the road for years, et cetera, et cetera. I think if anybody unseats the Young Bucks, it's got to be a team that we feel are going to be important for the long run.
I could see some sort of heel fuckery from the Young Bucks to keep the titles and to set up a rematch down the road. But
you've got
to
remember, we can't have too many of those. I mean, AEW is not dumb, and we know one match is probably going to have it. The main event.
My assumption is that, but let me tell you something. If the Bucks win, Kingston's eating the pin.
That's 100%. Yeah. And that you can't blame that. The Stadium Stampede Pot Dua. God, I love Hot Shots. Y'all remember that Hot Shots Part Deux? This is Stadium Stampede Part Deux. The Inner Circle versus the Pinnacle with the stipulation that if Chris Jericho and company do not win, the Inner Circle is no more. I hope and I believe, because AEW has done such a phenomenal job with MJF. In all honesty, like, they haven't missed a beat with him. Like, we can almost say with every other guy in this company, you could question, like, decisions. With MJF, from the beginning, it's just been one smart decision after another. A lot of it's obviously that he lives the gimmick, which is, I mean, such a big deal. But it would be so huge for him to make them disband. And if you're going to go all in on the Pinnacle, this is the way to do it. You get rid of the Inner Circle. I think it makes it more interesting. I think then Sammy's got to go on his own. Jericho obviously doesn't need a group. He doesn't. Hager might be the one guy that's really lost, and I'm ready for Santana and Ortiz to get back to just being a tag team. It's been really disappointing they hadn't used them, because I had heard great things about them, a few tag team matches I'd seen. They've been wonderful. This is going to be in the Jaguar Stadium again, correct?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I'm going to go with the Pinnacle, getting the win, Inner Circle disbanding. What you guys got?
I'm actually on the other side of the fence. I think that the Inner Circle gets their Stadium Stampede win back, considering that, you know, they're 0-1 in this type of match. Because, quite honestly, I just don't know what it is that they'll have MJF to do for the foreseeable future if there's not some sort of Jericho angle. I just don't know what would be next for that entire set of guys if they actually do accomplish what they're setting out to do.
The only reason to have this match to me is for the Inner Circle to lose. I thought the feud was over with Blood and Guts. I think that having this match...
You mean when Jericho set the business back for 30 years?
Anybody who has followed professional wrestling as long as we have, to not see that as the same sort of Vince gaming...
Oh, that was stupid. I was just kidding, Sam. It
annoys an AEW fans. Like,
yeah.
How dare him? Like, he fucking wrote letters to Ted Turner.
Yeah, no.
Jesus Christ, folks. No, I think that the Pinnacle wins here. That's sort of my prediction.
Because Jericho's got to be getting close to touring, right? I mean, part of why he has not left at all is because he hasn't been able to tour. I mean, you got to assume that there's going to be a Jericho Fozzy, you know, tour coming up.
And we know that COVID restrictions don't tend to bother him or stop him.
Which I love that I've seen now him twice outside of AEW in these documentaries, and in both of them, he's been maskless while almost everyone around him is wearing a mask, which is just to me hilarious. You know, again, Jericho's wife was at the Capitol in the 6th. What else do you need to know? The AEW World Championship 3-way match, which, okay, first of all, it's Cassidy, Pac, and Omega. If you live under a rock, Omega's going to win. I mean, Sam's right. There's probably going to be some kind of chicanery. I don't really care. This match is going to be amazing. I'm so excited about these three guys. I'm more excited than anything about the Cassidy spot. There's going to be some crazy Cassidy spot in this match. I just know where he's, you know, basically being a slug. And then all of a sudden he goes into full gear, which to me is one of the coolest things in wrestling. It really is. I mean, he's literally just kind of slouching around. And then all of a sudden when he kicks it into gear, everything about the gimmick. I love him, you know, jumping with his hands in his pockets, you know, flipping over people, you know, super, all of it. It's just great. Will you give me a Phil Mickelson thumbs up there?
You have to do the Orange Cassidy style.
Context, Keith, context.
Well, hey, Phil Mickelson gave 5,000 of them this weekend, so I think Phil Mickelson is Mr. Thumbs Up. But I got Omega winning, and I almost can see this somehow leading to a Pac Omega match at the next pay-per-view.
That would make sense. I like you. I'm interested in all the spots. This is going to be a fantastic match. I'm hoping we're going to get at least a good 25, 30.
Have we seen Omega in a triple threat match since he's been in AEW?
I don't believe so. I think the closest. I want to say that the closest thing was like maybe a tornado tag match, but I don't think a triple threat.
Does this go on last, or does the Stadium Stampede go on last?
This better go on last. I mean, how is it the most protected title in the world if you're not putting it on last of your pay-per-views, right, Sam? That's why I'm the head of the table, don't you?
I mean, I'm just asking. Do you guys think that it? I don't think the title match went on last year.
No, but I think that there wasn't a live crowd there last year.
Correct.
I'm saying there is going to be one this time, so I don't know if you want to end with, I mean, something's with probably going to be taped, right? It's going to be taped.
I assume.
I mean, especially after we saw, there was like two people mad last time, Sam, that they had to sit there for an entire hour and they complained. So, and we know how these AEW fans are. So we have reached the end of the podcast and the AEW pay-per-view preview. You guys got anything you want to plug before we get out of here?
Just the All-Star Package, IB Sports, the IB Entertainment, IB Network Group. Of course, as you mentioned at the top of the show, please follow us on Apple, Spotify, Anchor. Slap those 5 stars on us. Share with your friends, please.
The group, the Team Turnbuckle Group, I think has been doing a lot of fun stuff. I think there's been a lot of good questions. I really appreciate all the interaction there. Hopefully we can get more. I would just plug that. And the Patreon, $5 a month, as I always say, is always worth it. That's it.
I just want to plug how good my picks were on the backdoor cover for the PGA Championship. And as disappointing as it was to have that 50-1 not hit. Thanks a lot, Brooks Koepka, for going 4 over on the par fives yesterday. But we did have, or I should say we, sorry, Alan, I had Phil Mickelson at 7-1 to top 20. I had Scotty Scheffler at plus 450 to top 10. I had Paul Casey at 9-1 to top 5. And I also had Brooks Koepka at 8-1 to top 5. So,
you know, I almost kicked myself in.
Quiche.
I kicked myself in the butt for not jumping on the Brooks. Because I was looking at that, especially because I had listened to that podcast. And I was like, that's definitely just everything you guys have said. You know, I don't watch a lot of golf, but I knew about how well he does at the PGA. And I was like, I kicked myself in the butt for at least not getting him in, you know, on the first page.
Vegas bookers, I'm sure, were pretty nervous going into Sunday, because we even talked about it on the podcast at 50-1. There was going to be a lot of people taking Koepka. And I was just shocked they gave those kind of odds. And I mean, it almost backfired on him. But again, if you were like me and you doubled down with the top five, still did okay. And I'm sure they lost a lot of money there, but other than that, for the head of the table, yours truly, Chief Keith Fleming, ravishing Ron L. Too Many Belts Tinsley, and Sam the Shooter Howe. This has been the most recent edition of the Team Turnbuckle Podcast on the IB Sports Podcast Network. And we'll see you guys next week, where we will still have the most protected podcast in the podcast world.